I think I am now.
Yeah.
As you heard, if you're new here, I am not the preacher here at campus. I think I'm like third or fourth string. If you are like familiar at all with my athletic career, that tracks pretty well. We'll be comfortable right there. I'd ask that you you bear with me this morning. I've been so thankful for the series that Dusty and David and Taylor and others have preached. It has been challenging to me in ways that's like kind of hard to explain. But I believe that this the Sermon on the Mount especially is really, really hard. And I've appreciated how they have agreed with me. It's hard. And they've asked us to wrestle with these things. So if you wouldn't mind this morning, would you stand for the reading of Scripture? And we're going to read Matthew 5, 1 through 11. Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they'll be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me." You can be seated. I love that poem, and I think it's beautiful, and I think it's incredible, and I do not understand it because it does not seem true. As a matter of fact, I think often about the people that were hearing the Sermon on the Mount for the first time. I can actually hear like a young Judean man or whatever, like hearing Jesus say that and being like, "Jesus, I don't know if you've like watched the news lately, but like the meek are not inheriting the earth. Like that's not what's happened. The Romans are, right? Like they're the ones inheriting. They are the ones in power. They are the ones that are praying over us." I love how beautiful that story is, that poem is, but I think it's really difficult to understand. And I think Jesus does this on purpose. I think in a lot of ways, I think what Jesus is doing is saying, "I know that you think you understand the story. I know that you have already given meaning to the circumstances in which you currently live. I am telling you that you have misinterpreted it. You are incorrect. You are wrong. That is not the story that we are currently living in. You, those of you who are actually probably literally persecuted, afraid, scared, mourning, hungry and thirsty, poor, you are blessed. It is true. It is a new story, and I am telling it." He does it again and again throughout the sermon. As a matter of fact, it's like six different times throughout the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "You have heard it said before, but now I tell you." It's Jesus coming in and saying, I know you think you know the story. I have a new one. Listen. In a lot of ways, I think it's possible that this beautiful poem that we kind of, I don't know, I often did when I was younger, we kind of like brush over as kind of like his intro. I think it might be like Jesus's like thesis statement. I think it's him saying like, no, this is what is happening now. I know you think you know what was happening. I know you were expecting this other thing to occur. I think you know that this is how it's supposed to be. But me, the Messiah, I am coming to tell you a whole new story. And it is really good news. I love that it is the second Sunday of Advent. I think Advent has similar language. Advent asks us to wait upon the Lord, which is terrible. I hate it. I hate it so much, right? Don't we all? Like, I want so badly to not wait, right? For things to happen kind of on the timeline that I was expecting, right? But I think one of the things that's so wonderful about Advent is that it gives us language and it asks us to wait. And the reason it asks us to wait is not just for like convenience of the Lord, not just because he just decides it's best for us to stand in line like at the DMV, right? I think instead what Jesus is trying to get us to say is wait, slow down, hang on. Maybe what is happening right now, you do not understand what is actually occurring. Maybe there is more than what you can see. Maybe this story that you're currently telling yourself is actually not the story. Maybe you have misinterpreted the meaning of your circumstances. Wait for me. I have more to say. I love that idea. I love that imagery. It helps me in a lot of ways. I think one of the reasons I like it so much, I think one of the reasons it's connected to me, the language of Advent, is because I use story on a daily basis. It's the work I do, actually. I'm a licensed therapist here in Gwinnett, and like what I use, the kind of the modality that I use is called narrative. And the idea is like to hold people's stories, right? Is to sit with people in their stories, to understand their stories, which is a great privilege. But then ask them, like, are we sure this is the story? Are you sure this is the story? Is there a different story? Are you aware of the story you're telling yourself? And in so many ways, I think Jesus is so good at this approach. As a matter of fact, like, you can kind of see it, like his entire ministry through this lens. You can see it over and over again, Jesus coming in and saying, no, a whole different story here. Let me show you that this is actually not the story in what you believe it is. Dusty's already given us a few of these. He talked about Nicodemus and various ones, but I have three right here that are like my favorite. these are my three favorite, like Jesus being like, nope, wrong story. Here's another one. You're totally wrong. Let me show you a different one, right? The woman in the well is one that like we could, there's like, you know, tons of sermons that could be done about this. It's like a beautiful, really difficult, really hard to understand story in a lot of ways. But the thing to know is, like, that conversation at the well with this woman that's Samaritan, like, should have never happened. Like, should not be happening. It's, like, taboo. Like, it should not. It's very, like, inappropriate. And the woman at the well feels that. She's like, what are we doing here? You, like, holy man, I don't think we should even be talking. I came here at this time to, like, intentionally not see anybody, to not talk to anyone as I drew water from this well. And you're sitting here talking to me about all these different things, and you're saying that you know all the stuff about me, and you're saying that you're living water. And it's just a really funny moment where she kind of at the end of it says, I don't know what to do with this, but I guess when the Messiah comes, we'll just have to ask him, right? We'll make sure that he tells us what all of this means. And Jesus goes, I know, I'm him. The person you're talking to is the person you want to talk to, I promise. I am the person that is coming. And she, like, is so overwhelmed, and it changed her story so quickly, so immediately, that she goes and, like, stops hiding from all the people that she's hiding from. She goes back into the village. They all listen to her. Her story from, like, where it was right before that conversation to after is dramatically different. All the way change happens so quickly. The second one is in Matthew 26. It's the very end of Jesus' ministry. It's right when he's getting arrested. I love it so much. That whole scene in Gethsemane is beautiful, but and difficult and hard to understand. But especially this moment where Jesus is about to get arrested. I think about this and the disciples all the time. He's about to get arrested. Peter is there. Peter, who in just a minute will deny that he even knows him. Peter is there, right there, and is like hacking people's ears off, man. Ready to die and to kill for Jesus, knowing that this has always been what the story has been. Right. As a matter of fact, like throughout the Gospels, you see Peter like not understand what's going on most of the time. Right. And like I love Peter so much because he's just like so human and so like just like screws up constantly. And Peter was like, Peter, come on, man, help out. And in this moment, like Peter has always known that we're about to fight. We're about to do it. I brought my sword for this exact reason. This is where the story has always been going. And Jesus like picks up the ear, heals it, and then asks this particular question. Am I leading a rebellion that you've come out with swords and clubs to capture me? And like, I could just see this moment where Peter looks at him and like, yes, yeah, yeah, that's what we've been doing. Like, this is the whole deal, right? Like, I brought my sword because I thought you were leading a rebellion. I thought at some point we were gonna rise up, we were gonna overthrow our oppressors with power and strength and victory and blood. This is what I signed up for in a lot of ways, right? Like willing to die. And Jesus says, this is not the story, Peter. This is not the story. You have misinterpreted where we're going. And there will be sacrifice coming, and it will be mine. And it'll be different than what you expect. I love these in particular. I love Luke 15. If you've been around me very long, if you've ever like known me, like the work I do, I talk about Luke 15 all the time. This is one of my favorite passages from it. It's Luke 15, 3 through 6. Which of you, having 100 sheep, losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the lost one until he finds it? And when he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. When he comes home, calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice for me, for I found my lost sheep." Friends, one of the reasons I love that story so much is because the answer is like none of us. None of us would do this. Who wouldn't do this? None of us. There's 99 sheep. There's one. I hope he comes back. But like, I don't know, man. Like, we got a lot of money here. You know, like, I don't have time. I also don't think I would put it on my shoulders and be really sweet to it. Like, I don't think I would, like, call everyone and tell everyone I lost one of their sheep. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, the answer is, like, none of us, man. I love how Jesus is like, of course this is the story, right? And people are like, what are we talking about? He does that throughout Luke 15. He does that throughout the gospel. Over and over and over again, Jesus says, "I'm going to rewrite the story. I'm going to make it all the way different. And eventually what I'm going to do is I'm going to make it really good news." Now, the hardest part is that you can't see it yet. And the stories that you believe, the endings that you see, you've created your good news. I promise mine is better, but you have to let me do it. You have to let me do it. And I don't ever want him to. I'll be honest with you. I have all of the endings to all of the stories that I need, all of them, all the time. And I just need Jesus to, like, stamp that, just to make it happen, please. This is the struggle in my life, and I will tell you a couple of different stories where God, the Spirit, has guided me and said, this is not the story that is actually happening. I need you to hear me and follow me in a different way. Those have been hard moments and beautiful moments and moments of great faith for me. In 2012, and really for a while since then, my wife and I were working through infertility. It's a difficult process to go through. There's these ups and downs and tons of like doctor's appointments and embarrassing questions. There's things you got to go do and see. Caitlin had multiple procedures. And it's this roller coaster of like hope and disappointment that happens again and again and again. I know some of the people in this room know that process well. And we were going through it. And as Caitlin and I reflected back on that time, we talked about how we were interpreting the meaning of those stories. And we were doing it pretty incorrectly. But she talked often about how she felt failure, right? That because of this, what this means is that I'm a failure. I was feeling unworthy, not chosen, right? That I was just not considered. I wasn't really important enough to be heard. That's what I was interpreting that to be. And we held those burdens as we walked around for those years, right? And it was hard for us even at times to talk about it because it was big and it was difficult. We moved from that process into the adoption process, also a hard process, a difficult process, and we found a different story, similar kind of feelings, right? Abandonment, fear, guilt, all kinds of different things. On March 4th, 2015, we were about 72 hours away from actually picking up our adopted son. We'd been matched with a child. We'd met the birth mom. We had a date that we were going to pick it up. I got a call that told me from our caseworker that the birth mother had changed her mind, and it was my job to go tell Caitlin. We were working at the same school at the time, and so I went and told our principal, and he got us subs, and I went and got her out of class. Caitlin was not expecting this news at all. She thought I was just picking her up to go to lunch or something. I got her in the car. I told her. And it was a really bad day. We cried and cried. And we went home, and like, I told her that we had it all handled at school. I remember really specifically, it was like kind of a cloudy, dreary day, kind of like this. And the house, when we walked in, was pretty dark, right? It was like a Wednesday morning, like around 11:30. It was pretty dark, and like we didn't turn on any lights. I remember like Caitlin shutting the door to the nursery that had been all built out because it was just like, it felt like all of the narratives that we had built into failure and abandonment and all that kind of stuff was just like reverberating from that, right? We sat on like opposite ends of the couch and like just overwhelmed. We were overwhelmed with grief that was hard to explain. Like it was hard to explain because like it felt like death to us, and no one had died, but it felt like that to us, right? And it was really, we felt very alone. I remember that. And like at 11:30 in the morning, someone knocks on our door. Who in the world is here at 11:30 on a Wednesday morning? And it was three of our best friends. They had heard, and they had heard the situation. They had gotten substitutes too, and they came in and literally tackled us, literally. Like they jumped on top of us, and they cried with us, and they held us, and they cried some more, and laughed with us some, and fed us food. and cried with us a little bit more and got us through that day. And I remember it very specifically, Kim, one of our really good friends, she said, "It's too dark in here. Like, turn on a light." I remember like vividly, like hope and peace rushing in. I remember we remembered that there was hundreds of people all over like the world that were like praying for us and cared about us, that had given us money for this adoption, like that were worried about us. People were literally driving to us at that moment. Like, we were not alone. That we had misinterpreted the end of that story. We had misinterpreted what was happening right then. And we had given it the wrong, and we were reminded that we are not alone, that the story is not over, and to wait and to hope. The story has a happy ending, and actually kind of hesitate at times to tell this part because I don't want everyone to think that I believe that every story like this has a happy one. But we have a 10-year-old that's upstairs right now in class, and his birthday was actually March 4th, 2015. He was born on that day. That was the worst day of our lives. Now it's the best. I think about that often, and I think about stories that can be rewritten. I wonder if that resonates with some of you today. I wonder if what is happening and what you find yourself and the places that you are walking through and the circumstances that you're in, I wonder if you have assigned the meaning that is incorrect, that is wrong. I wonder if the Lord is asking us to wait and hold on those interpretations because there is more here. And I want to be clear, as I ask that, I know the heaviness that I ask there. I know that there is real weight to ask for that. And I ask it anyway because I think that's what Jesus asks us to. He says, hold on that interpretation. Hold on the meanings to this. And let me see if there's more. Let me see if I can write more to this story. I know for me, that deeply resonates with me. And I have had to intentionally work hard at making that available to me. I wonder if in some ways you need this church to remind you that you are not alone. I wonder if in some ways that you need to make sure that we know, that the people in this room know what the circumstances are and the interpretations that you've come to, and let us hold that with you and help remind you that there is more here, more than just that. I know people in this room have done that for me many times, and I want to make sure that you know that that is what is available here at Campus Church. It is one of the reasons why I love this church, one of the reasons why I get to raise my family here. I want to leave you with this one this morning. This summer, Jonas, our son, our 10-year-old, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. Again, more circumstances for us to walk through, more things for us to hold. And on Monday night, this past Monday night, Jonas got really sick. The diagnosis is pretty new, and so sickness can be pretty dangerous right now. He was okay. He was stable. But we went into the emergency room because he was sick. And there was a few moments before they stabilized him where he wasn't okay. He was really hurting. He was scared. And I could see it in his eyes that he was scared. He was like really, really struggling before they could. There was a lot of doctors that were working on him. And I remember being in that moment, and I remember feeling very helpless. Many people that have been in hospitals know this moment, right? Where you're just like, someone help. Make it work. And I remember that prayer, right? That, like, one of those real prayers where there's not cliches or, like, flowery words or, like, things that you've said before, but it is one of those ones of deep vulnerability. As a matter of fact, I wonder if it's one of those moments where it means, like, literally poor in spirit, right? Like, Father, I need you here right now. Not later, but now. And I remember asking him, like, you know, kind of after he had gotten stabilized and kind of reflecting on that moment, I remember like that prayer that I offered, like, God, I just need you here in this moment. And this is what kind of popped up in my head this Advent season. I think it's one of my very favorite songs of the season, and this is the first four lines. Come, thou long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free. From our fears and sins, release us. Let us find our rest in thee. Let's worship together.